This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV, and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Hello, Susie Rong.
Hi, Warren. What's your life going to look like when you're 75?
Oh, I wasn't prepared for that question. What's it going to look like? I don't know. Hopefully, I'm in a state of happy retirement and enjoying life, not worrying the world. I don't know. What's it going to be like?
Do you think it's going to be very different from today?
I don't. Maybe. Yeah, I would imagine. I can't imagine I'll be working still when I'm 75. Maybe I will be. Maybe I'll be one of those people that can't give it up. What do you reckon? What will yours be like?
I don't know if it's going to be very different. There's something about me that's very... I think I'm resistant to change. I'm scared of change.
Why's that?
And I just like things being very stable. I think If I'm looking back at my formative years, my childhood, I think I've had a lot of kind of tumultuous times.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I really value when things are really calm. So I think inadvertently I become very good with contentment, which some people might interpret as complacency or laziness. I think it's sort of similar.
Do you feel like you're in control when everything is... I suppose, stable and not changing? Is that what it is?
I don't feel like it's a matter of control. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't feel like it's a matter of control. I just feel like it is a state that I'm always hoping for, you know? I think people look for times of excitement or, you know, joy, you know? But I value a lot kind of like nothing happening because I had so much happening as a child, I think, because my parents were always fighting. So I think I when it's calm and peaceful, I kind of sit there and think, oh, I wish it would last forever, knowing that it's never going to last forever.
I love it when it's calm and peaceful. I wish I could get it more often. To be honest with you, I wish I could stop and slow down and just take a few minutes and enjoy the calm and tranquility. That's something that I desperately need. I love it. I think it's a beautiful space to be in, Susie.
See, that's a strange thing for me to hear. I feel like it's easier to get there, you know, rather than running all the time. And I feel like you don't have that sort of complacency than I have.
It's interesting because I feel like I had more time when I was younger. I feel like the older I get, the busier I'm getting. And, you know, as soon as I wake up, it's go, 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 go. It doesn't stop until late at
night.
What
is that? Do you feel like you're running out of time?
I don't know. There's so much that I need to get done and do that I just don't have a choice and I have to keep doing things. I feel like that. I need to stop. Desperately, I need to sit down and just go breathe and enjoy the moment. Go for a nice walk and relax. I did something on Sunday night. I went out to Lightscape here in the Botanic Gardens. It was absolutely beautiful. I spoke about it briefly yesterday. Just beautiful. And there was some lovely... And I was in the moment and I got a bit teary at one point because I thought, oh my goodness, Warren, you're stopping. You're doing something. You're enjoying nature, even though it's surrounded by people taking Instagram photographs. But
some years ago, I heard someone say the words glorification of busyness.
Glorification.
Of busyness, yeah.
What does that mean?
You know how you might meet people and you go, oh, hello, long time no see, how are you? Oh, life's busy. You know, like it's meant to be a good thing.
I also think it's an excuse for, I can't be bothered telling you how I am. Busy,
I feel like there is a glorification of that.
Do you think?
I think so. And there's sort of a shame about not doing enough. And I think it makes people do too much, in my opinion. Oh, but that's just me, obviously.
Maybe there's a shame around not being productive. I mean, I would prefer to not be as busy. I'm quite happy not to be. I just need to find that space. But No, there's no, definitely not. But I was on Sunday night, I stopped and I was walking around and I was really enjoying it. I thought, I need to do this more often. I need to just.
You need to do that all the time.
Yeah, right. Wisdom from Susie Rong. I love talking to you, Susie. I really do. It's so interesting. But you're right. I think we often say, oh, how are you? I'm busy. It's like a catch-all for don't ask me anything else because I can't be bothered answering it. But it's also you know what? I don't know. It's not a well-thought-out answer, is it? It's not like if I asked you, Susie Rong, how are you?
It's a bit of a humble brag sometimes.
Do you think? Yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, from now on, let's do this. Let's have an agreement that when someone asks, how are we? Let's say, I'm bored. I've got nothing to do.
Let's see how they respond. You don't want to be bored. You just don't want to be too busy. But then, that's just me.
Then they'll have to engage. You can't let that one go. Today, Susie, we're talking about a show. It's called Mr. Loverman. It's on Binge. Tell us what you thought of it.
Barry is a 75-year-old Londoner originally from Antigua. He has a wife and two daughters, but after half a century, the marriage is finally falling apart. Not that the couple had ever been happy together, because, you see, Barry and Morris have been in love since the early days in Antigua, long before Carmel had entered the picture. The A-part BBC series Mr. Loverman, now streaming on Binge, delves deep into the life of an old gay man, someone who has survived many years of the worst homophobia, had even seen other gay men getting murdered. There was every reason to hide his true self and stay closeted, and every reason to appear a normal family man. But times have changed. And in the very start of Mr. Loverman, we observe how Barry decides to finally leave his wife. It is almost a naive decision because it quickly becomes clear that this is all going to be extremely hard for Barry, who had built a facade so impenetrable that it will require incredible courage to dismantle. I came to this series with high expectations, knowing that there is so much to unpack of an old queer person's experiences. I knew that if done right, Mr. Loverman could reveal all the biggest truths of our lives as queer people, connected through generations of hardship and injustice. I'm glad to report that the series does not disappoint. In fact, it exceeds my expectations, not only portraying with accuracy the challenges of someone like Barry, but it is also really emotionally affecting in a way that completely took me by surprise. Directed by Hong Kao and starring Lenny James, who has gone on to win the most prestigious acting awards in the UK for this very role, Mr. Loverman is unparalleled in its poignancy and will be one of the most moving dramas you'll encounter this year. It made me cry so many times for all the best reasons, and I urge you to check it out on Binge. Warren, I hope it resonated with you in the same way, in some ways.
It did. I found it very emotional at times, Susie Rong. The show got me thinking about people who come out in later in life, in their 60s, their 70s, even their 80s, of what that experience is like. Is it a freeing experience after so much time, or is it heartbreaking that it took so long to finally be your authentic self? I found that I got quite emotional at the fact, at the cost that, you know, it takes to hide and to be in a marriage that you really don't want to be in. And is it also fair on the other partner in the marriage? I found that quite emotional, the cost, the suppression of oneself for so long. And then all of a sudden having the courage later in life to let go of that marriage that isn't the authentic marriage and be your authentic self and follow who you love. But you've missed all those years where you really could be yourself. I found that quite sad. I don't know how about you, Susie.
Oh, I found it so moving. Mm. I didn't find it sad all the time. There were moments that were really sad and some moments of me kind of tearing up because it's, you know, I see the glimpses of freedom and the glimpses of possibility of coming out before he's died, you know? Mm. And I think especially of trans people, there's so many of us in history who have gone to the grave without ever living authentically at all. And I love that you were saying about it being unfair to the to his family. I think the show is so well written. You can see how it's unfair to everyone, you know? It's unfair to him. It's unfair to his wife, of course, unfair to his kids, unfair to his grandchild. But it's... You can't really say, you can't ever say that it's fault. You see so clearly, how it was impossible for him to be, to live anywhere else.
Exactly. And I mean, Barrington, I mean, he kept his deep love for his lifelong partner, Morris, but it's been hidden from his children and his wife, as you mentioned. But how do we balance, I suppose, the love we choose with that obligation that we inherit through what society has forced us to become? I mean, that to me would be, I'm not in that position, but that would be, I imagine, a very difficult choice, wouldn't it? You've got obligations that you need to commit to, yet you've also got this drive or this pull towards being yourself and freeing yourself. I'd find that quite, I don't know, quite difficult.
The lie is impossible, but many people have had to live through it, you know. You know, it's interesting that we only got to see the wife's reaction at the very end, because he actually wasn't able to come out until the very end of the 8 episodes. And obviously she reacted with a lot of anger and a lot of regret, I guess, with the half a century that she spent with this man. But I felt like a logical development was for her to gain some understanding quite quickly, you know. But obviously, that's not the story is not about that. And you know, I do feel like it, there is a possibility that in a lot of these relationships, these people, these gay men, especially who had married women, you know, in the 50s, 60s, that maybe their wives found out earlier, and then they were able to find a piece, you know, that the marriage takes on a different complexion, that it wasn't built on lies. I think the problem is a lying. The problem is not marrying the person that you love the most, you know. He didn't get to marry Morris, as far as we know. He married, Carmel. I don't think that it would have been completely disastrous if he had come out to her earlier on. And I think men do that. I believe men have done that. If they were able to be honest, you know, maybe in the 80s, in the 90s, and then find a way to live a different sort of married life. I don't know if it's too romantic of me or not romantic enough of me to think of marriage that way. I feel like, you know, people talk about the passion dying out after a few years of marriage, and then it becomes a different kind of relationship. You know, I feel like they could have found love, maybe not the same kind of love that he has with Morris. But if, you know, it could have been if he had stopped lying earlier.
I mean, you've got to think about the toll that it takes on a person as well in living that double life. I mean, we've all had that experience, haven't we, where it's taken so much energy to try and hide yourself, and then to, when I was watching this, I was thinking of the energy that it takes to also have another relationship. I mean, that was a long-term relationship with his best friend. The amount of energy, so he's got a double whammy happening there, where he's got to hide that relationship as well as hide himself and be someone else with his wife. That's exhausting.
That's why it took so long for him to finally bite the bullet. And I loved the final episode where he actually did come out. And they made that scene of him going to a party with young gay men so interesting to me. Because usually you would like to imagine that, oh, he's finally done it. He's told all his family. Everybody knows he can be authentic now. He can have a taste of freedom now. But he walks into this little world of young gay men and completely at a loss as to how to conduct himself, completely not understanding what it's like to be gay, even though he is gay, but not understanding how to live life that way. I thought that was so cleverly done, so cleverly written, and just added so much complexity to this story and to this person that we got to, I think I got to love eventually.
We're chatting with Susie Rong about Mr. Love Man. This text has come in, and I tend to agree with it. The impacts on the wife hit me hard. He made his choice with full information. The wife missed out on a true love because of his deception, but he still made the choice. His wife did not have that choice. I mean, that is true, though, isn't it? As much as we can
the
say...
The bit where she met her colleague, her workmate, and had a brief fling with him, but had to call it off. That was when I cried the hardest.
Yeah.
When she said goodbye to him.
I mean, to be fair, that was her opportunity to have true love. And on one hand, we have empathy towards... I mean, we all know what it's like to hide ourselves, and we have empathy towards that. But on the other hand, you know, society and history and all the things that have happened, which we know about, have pushed people to hide themselves. So it's a really difficult one to navigate. But why should someone else have to miss out on something at the same time?
Well, because the whole system is so difficult, you know. I don't know how many people it works for, you know. Obviously, in this show, we can see, oh, all this masquerading has harmed so many people, and nobody intended for it to be that way. It was nobody's ill will for things to pan out this way. It's just the persecution that queer people had to suffer was so intense back in the day that it made people make these choices. Then they aren't really choices because there's no alternative, right?
No, true.
You just have to live your life this way. And so many people have so many sad years, you know. I wouldn't want to say that they had completely sad lives. I'd like to imagine that when the children were growing up, they were happy, they had happy moments. And hopefully now that he's turned a new chapter, a new leaf, that everyone's lives would improve. But it is a lot of wasted time.
Susie, I might be drawing a long bow here, but I wonder if this is something that perhaps those who do attack minority groups don't think about, that you might think you're doing it and attacking someone, but it might be coming back and biting you in the bum as well, because it could be causing, you know, people like yourself to be forced into situations where you're, I suppose, I don't want to use the word being deceived, but, you know, you're on the receiving end of someone having to hide themselves. And the cost that comes with that. I don't know.
To make it even more silly is people impose these rules and expectations on queer people, but they also they impose those things on themselves. You know, they follow those rules themselves. And often, as we have seen, it doesn't work out for them because those rules are just, I don't know if they're too old or if they're just too contrary to human nature or whatever, but it's crazy that people want to live that way.
Exactly. Another message. Hey, Susie and Warren, a book that talks about this, and I highly recommend, it's called So Being Reasonable. It's such a great read. The author is Eleanor Gordon Smith. That's from Scott from Flemington. It's called Stop Being Reasonable. Have to have a read of that, Susie. Have you read it?
I like that title.
Stop Being Reasonable.
That title makes me think of how I have this principle where sometimes you have to catch yourself when you're making choices that are all about making it convenient for other people.
Yes.
You know, like people pleasing. We are so used to twisting ourselves into all kinds of pretzel shapes for other people.
To make everyone else happy. Yes.
Yeah. So you need to stop being reasonable. Not that I've read the book, but it sounds like that.
You'll be reading it now. Stop being reasonable. Susie, I love our chats. It's so interesting. What are we watching next week?
I'm Your Venus. It's a new documentary feature on Netflix about Venus Extravaganza, a trans trailblazer and an unforgettable personality from the seminal 1990 film Paris is Burning. We'll have another great chat about it when I see you next Tuesday.
Susie, before you go, another one. Paul includes Warren and Susie, super radio, fun, thought-provoking, wisdom, warmly authentic. Thank you as always. That's from Paul includes. Susie, see you then.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.